We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you're with us on a Wednesday. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. Sup?
We got sports, man.
Sup, dudes?
We got sports coming up tomorrow. PGA back.
Woohoo!
I like that, down in Fort Worth.
I'm excited. Yep. Charles Schwab Challenge, one of the great old tracks on the PGA Tour, the Colonial. It's absolutely wonderful. Harold Varner, PGA Tour professional, taking his COVID test today.
Right. We'll see what their procedures are as all these sports come back. There's obviously the testing side of it, you know, to make sure, you know, nobody tests positive. If so, what happens, or, you know, what's going on with their procedure. So glad to see another sport come back.
Yep. So we'll have that. We'll have Jesse Rogers coming up here in a couple of minutes to get ready to talk about more of the rollout and the things that are happening around the world of Major League Baseball.
Oh,
and the perpetual factory of sadness and suck that turns in. Although we're in the deal zone now, so we'll find out maybe more of what that could mean.
Are we still in the deal zone after Diamondbacks general partner Ken Kendrick did what he did on Arizona
Radio? I still think we're in the deal zone. And the fun with the NBA, we're in the kind of tentacle zone of, we know they're going to play, the money's all squared away, but man, it's a lot of the ancillary things that we're talking about with the NBA.
We're in the deal zone with Major League Baseball. We're in the real zone with the NBA, where they're finding out, all right, this is the reality of, as someone, I saw someone yesterday call it Real World Orlando.
Okay. That's
because
very
that's
good.
What it's got the potential to be.
Just don't say Real World Road Rules.
No.
Because that would trip you up.
There's no road rules challenge on this one because you are in the house right now. What happens if we take 22 NBA teams and stop being fake and start getting real in Disney World at the Wide World of Sports? I'm ready to find out.
Listen, it's going to be interesting, right? Because they're going to be isolated for up to 7 weeks before any friends or family can come
in. Right, up through the first round of the playoffs.
And so they won't have accompaniment, for lack of a better term.
They won't have significant others there.
But they will not be looking into recreational usage of a certain...
We're not going to test for drugs.
We're not going to test for weed, is what they say.
Yeah, for weed.
We're not going to test for weed. So,
well, which is interesting because, as they mentioned, it's decriminalized in Florida.
Yeah.
It's certainly
not legal, but it's decriminalized.
It's certainly not something that the NBA has ever really, like, gone out and they test for it, but you never see punishments or suspensions for marijuana use. So it's basically like people are finding out now that the NBA actually tested for weed.
Right.
I think that's what a lot of people
I was
are
this many
out.
Days old.
Well,
right?
Exactly. So I don't think that's big news out of for anything there. We are another guest we're going to have on. We're going to have Don Garber on, the MLS commissioner, at 9 o'clock in about an hour. He has a special announcement and, you know, of what's going on with the MLS.
And they're also, I would say, going to be doing, I mean, they're coming back with the NBA at a very similar time in ways that have a lot of parallels. And
right.
So I'm very interested to find out, as we've always wondered, how much these commissioners of the various leagues talk to each other. How much of these ideas have they kind of gone in concert with each other and figure out what do you think might work based on some of the similarities?
Could be neighbors there down in Disney. So see what kind of rules apply to everybody.
Everybody's going to Disney World. I'm so happy.
Everybody is going to Disney World.
I'm just so happy about all of this.
And there are teams that are not going to Disney World, and there are teams that are out of this, eight teams out of the NBA and not making the trip down there. And there are some that say, hey, things are fair, things are unfair. And Brian Windhorst, he's had some fun with some of the things we talked about the NBA, but he's basically like, hey, if you think it's unfair, get over it.
When this protocol comes out, which I've told you is going to be very long, there's going to be a lot of people screaming about things. And I'm just going to say right now, everybody has to just get on the understanding. This is going to be unfair. At the bottom of this, at the bedrock, is that we are trying to keep everything safe. And, you know, for example, I hear Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant talking about wanting to go in there with their teams, even though they're not going to play. And I would just say the answer to that is no, because the entire concept of this is to take people out of the bubble. And just like these other teams that are outside the bubble, those eight teams who are saying this is not fair that we don't have the same opportunity to work with our teams. Yeah, it's not fair. That's just the way that it's going to be. The schedule that's going to come out soon, probably this week, is not going to be fair. This is completely unprecedented. And I see people applying rationality of normal times to this scenario, and it's just not going to be that way.
He's 100%
right. 100% right. Listen, we had Gary Bettman on the NHL commissioner. I asked him, listen, there are seven teams you left out of this thing. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, that's just the kind of way it worked. Not everybody is going to be happy with this when the protocols come out for the players that are going to be in Orlando, certainly for the teams that don't make it out there who already are talking about some sort of like mini training camp, like tournament amongst them so they can get their players together. But some of this isn't going to be fair. I mean, we are in such uncertain times that nothing is going to run smoothly here. You just have to kind of ride with it.
Talked to a coach in the NBA last night and the position was pretty clear. Tough. Win more games.
Yeah.
Win more games and you could be part of this. You were terrible. Win more games.
Well, and no one could have predicted this. So everyone's got to kind of make adjustments and concessions. It's funny that we say that and we watch what's going on in Major League Baseball. We understand some of those things are a little bit different. But I look at this and say, especially when it's going to come to what happens when you're one of the teams in that campus environment, when you're down in Orlando being there, because it's going to feel restrictive at times. And I guess that's what we've all dealt with over the course of this quarantine and the pandemic in some version. And people have dealt with it, quite frankly, on a scale that is much larger than what all of these guys are getting ready to go through down in Disney. That's not to say it won't come with its problems, but they're so relatively lesser than everything else that complaining is not really going to be something that people tolerate with this.
For the better part of 3.5 months, my life has been a mile and a half loop.
Yeah.
From my house to your house. Back to my house. That's it. By the way, the Bucks are in this thing, obviously, as the top overall seed right now in the East, and the Bucks have outscored their opponents by 11.3 points per game this season. Why is that significant? Well, that's on pace to be the fifth highest in a season in NBA history. And just for point of procedure here, the four teams ahead of them all won the championship that year. Those four teams, the 71-72 Lakers, the 70-71 Milwaukee Bucks, the 95-96 Bulls, you may have heard of them. Last Dance, I don't know, it may have crossed your paths. And the 2016-2017 Warriors. And that's a Stats Incredible is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life.
Yeah, I don't think people, to your point, Mike, are going to want, and the players really won't, they're going to see in writing the restrictions and won't really know it until they're down there feeling it of things they can and can't do. But you're right, and Brian's right, nobody's going to want to hear it. No, you're down there. You're getting to continue your season and play. There are going to be some restrictions. Don't want to hear the complaints.
No, and you know what? Like, I think we'll all be a little more prepared for it when they come and they're going through it and we see those things happening in real time and we've got sports back. It's just right now, and I know, like, it's become, like, this memeable, awful phrase of everyone saying, read the room, but this is one of those instances where the NBA does a really good job of operating as a big national brand, right? We talk about how many, so many sports like college football and baseball are regional. The NBA is a very national brand, and so they understand as well as anyone that what's best for the whole is what's going to drive that sport and keep it successful.
So we have the NBA with a clear path and a plan going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the one sport that still has no clear path or plan going forward. And it's the one that could have been the dominant team to get out there first as one of the big four and get this thing all lined up. And instead, they're just puking all over themselves in a fight over money. So for more on this, I'm sure he's thrilled that that's the way we bring him in on that discussion. But he's lived it, so he understands it. We're delighted to be joined by Jesse Rogers, our ESPN Major League reporter. Jesse, thanks for being with us. So all of us here can't help but notice that the owner's proposal was 76 games and the new player's proposal was 89 games, and somewhere in the middle is exactly 82 or 82 and a half games. Is that, do you think that's where we're headed when this is all said and done?
Well, that is certainly one optimistic look at it, perspective, because still one of the sides needs to come off its basic position. The owners have to increase the pool of money they want to give the players. They really haven't done that essentially within their first couple offers. The players will have to come off their full pro rata salary. And I believe there's a middle ground to be had, but not everybody believes that and thinks we're still headed towards Manfred implementing that unilaterally implementing that 48 to 50 game season. But, you know, if the players take a little bit of a haircut, 10%, that's still a lot of money given back to the owners, right? And it at least shows the players are willing to understand playing without fans is part of this whole thing. So, look, I'm optimistic, but we all might be a little naive because now, for the first time, we do see a middle ground there. But still, one side has to come off its extreme position that they've both taken this whole time.
What do you think the compromise would be if they put it in your hands? They say, Jesse, figure this out for us. How are we playing?
Figure it out, Jesse. Go for it.
What do you say is the compromise from both sides?
That's why I mentioned 90% pro rata. Like, 10% doesn't sound so bad, right? And it is coming off their position that they negotiated this in last March. But look, they may have to give a little to get back on the field. And a 10% hit shouldn't be that bad. I don't think the owners would accept that right now. They have not really increased that pool, but that's the compromise. 80 games. Maybe it's closer to 76, their initial offer, but they have to go up from 75% pro rata salary to about 90%. That's where I think it can get done. Though I haven't heard one player say that they'd come off that 100% salary they expect. So again, this still could be headed down the wrong path, which is Manfred just laying down the hammer. But there's the middle ground. It's there to be had right now.
Jesse, I'm curious because so much of this has been public that some of the issues come up when you see things like Ken Kendrick, the Diamondbacks managing general partner, coming out and saying the words that Major League Baseball players that have been part of the union for years on end have disliked for so long. I want to play this sound for you where Ken Kendrick quite literally calls for a salary cap.
Why is it that we are the only sport that doesn't have revenue sharing? You know, all of the other major sports have revenue sharing. And so what would be happening right now, if think about it, if this situation would have evolved and we would be in a revenue sharing model, we would be acting as partners to get back together and put the game on the field.
Wow.
The very lack of a revenue sharing model puts us in a adversarial position when we really ought to be partners in advancing the game and building the revenues, because all will win under those circumstances. Right. Why is it that the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL, both their ownership group and their union leadership, have recognized the value in that kind of a system, and our union leadership takes the position that's a non-starter? You know, we wouldn't even be in a discussion right now if we had revenue sharing.
And so that sounds courtesy of Arizona Sports 98.7. So, Jesse, I just wonder, if I'm a player hearing that, how am I supposed to think this is going to end with 10% if we give them that open?
Well, it's a good question on your part. I don't know how it's going to end with the middle ground, because neither side has come off their positions. But let me address what he said. For the first time in my life, I agree with him. Now, the answer to his question is why they aren't is because the baseball union's been the strongest, most powerful union in all sports. They've held off of that salary cap. But for the first time in my life, I think it's a good idea for the players, and I'll tell you why. Not just to get out of messes like this, because if you're partners, it's easier to do so. It's because of the cycling of rebuilding that's gone on in baseball. And what happens when teams start to rebuild, and they almost have all done it over the last 10 years, is salaries drop. These teams end up spending nothing on their payrolls during the first few years of rebuilding. To me, a salary cap would have to come with a salary floor to force these teams that are going to rebuild to at least sign up some free agents that cost some money to get them over that floor. So you have a floor, you have a cap. It means Gerrit Cole may not make what he made last offseason, but also means some middle tier to lower tier free agents will get some money. And when there's a pandemic, when there's a crisis, they can work as partners. So I actually agree. Now, the owners might be taking advantage of this crisis to push that narrative, but fine. If it's the right thing to do, it's the right thing to do. I think the players need to reexamine that going into the next CBA.
MLBPA's latest proposal to baseball is what everybody's talking about. What everybody's talking about, brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time.
Jesse Rogers back with us. So, Jesse, let's stick with what Ken Kendrick said there, because I think it's disingenuous for an owner of a Major League Baseball team to say all the other three big unions have seen the value in revenue sharing. No, they really haven't. They just have had to deal with it. None of them want a salary cap, but it's the only way they could get it around. So I think that's a disingenuous point to begin with, because that's not a true statement. It's the way he would like it to be, but I don't think that's true. And the other part of it, why would you bring that up when you, as our Jeff Passan said, and we're all on this phrase, we're in the deal zone now of making a deal or getting close to making a deal. And why would you publicly say something that you know is only going to spark so much vitriol and backlash from the players?
Well, look, both sides have said some things publicly I think they'd like to take back, going back to Blake Snell. I talked to Cubs owner Tom Ricketts last week.
Biblical.
Biblical losses. And DeWitt yesterday on St. Louis radio saying we don't have a lot of cash. It's not a we don't generate a lot of extra revenue or profits. However he said it, players and people are rolling their eyes at both sides. So, it's interesting that usually the owners are pretty buttoned up, but they have spoken publicly over the last week. You could tell Kendrick wasn't very happy with things. And I'll also push back on something he said there. It isn't completely clear in that March agreement. I've seen it. Both sides made mistakes in writing up that agreement, in my opinion. That's the first mistake of this whole negotiation. It is ambiguous on whether they're open. They can open up the discussions on salary. There's no doubt there's a clause in there that says they will discuss things without fans in the stands, but it didn't even appear in player compensation in that section. So it is ambiguous there, and that caused a huge, huge problem. And by the way, the players have been steadfast since that day that their salaries have been decided. So it's not like something they decided to latch on to a week ago. They've said that from the beginning. So that's a poor job on both sides writing that agreement. I am a little surprised by some of the public rhetoric, but they're trying to win the court of public opinion, and I don't think either side's necessarily winning it.
So we've always said we see a football play, and me and my son, both football players, could look at that replay and see two things completely different in it. Are you saying this agreement in March, you can actually understand if either side came out and is saying what they're saying because it was so poorly written?
I say yes, and I would say that emphatically. I mean, again, to sum it up real quick, under resumption of play, that was the section of resumption of play at the top, there's one line that says the sides will discuss the economic feasibility of playing without fans. Under player compensation, there's 12 sections. Not one of them mentions their pay without fans. It divides their you know, divided by 162 and prorate this and that and this. It never says this is what will happen in terms of pay without fans. They should have really laid it out with fans, without fans. So I absolutely believe it's ambiguous enough to have this argument.
Talking to Jesse Rogers with us here on Golic and Wingo. So when we look at it now, baseball's obviously had a chance, and we had seen baseball in other countries certainly come back because of the different timelines with the pandemic. But we've all, I think, been frustrated looking at this saying we could be already getting ready to play baseball again had this been a negotiation that had a little more, I'd say, mutual respect on both sides of this. Has baseball already lost? Have they already missed such a major opportunity, knowing the glut of sports that we're potentially getting ready for this fall?
The answer is yes, but especially yes if people stop and think about it. And what I'm getting at is today, which is, you know, just happens to be the day you're having me on, is the day that spring training 2.0 could have restarted, right? Could have began. Yeah. And think about that 2 months ago. What were we saying a month ago, 2 months ago? The virus will tell us when we can play. The virus will tell us when we can play. Well, the virus, through the medical people, through the governments, has said you can play, and they aren't playing. They've already lost.
Well, that's a great point, Jesse, as Jesse Rogers is with us. Again, they could have been the first ones out of the gate, and instead they are dragging their heels because of a money fight. Real quickly, you said 90% prorated salary. It makes sense, and it does. But Jeff Passan has said, our baseball insider, that basically that is a hill that the players are willing to die on. Do you believe that they will actually move off 100% and get to 90%?
No, I'm with Jeff on that. I don't think so. But sometimes it's at its worst right before a deal, right? And everyone I've talked to said if there is a deal, it'll come at the 11th hour. So I'm going to leave that caveat that you die on that hill, and then all of a sudden, or you say you're going to die on that hill, and all of a sudden you move a little bit. So I agree with Jeff, but I'm holding out hope that there's that little movement on both sides that gets this done in a amicable enough manner at the end.
Otherwise, it could be biblical. Jesse, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks so much for the insight.
You got it. Have a great day.
Interesting. He's seen the proposal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he has.
I'm glad he did.
And to say how ambiguous it was, it's amazing because what I took out of that has nothing to do with what's going on now, because I do think eventually they're going to play, whether it's 48 games or whatever, is that he thinks that they should maybe go to a salary cap and a revenue share like the other major sports because of the split. I look at the because we always talk about it, the payrolls for baseball, three teams are over $200 million. 17 teams are between, $199 and $100 million, and 10 teams are under $1 million, with the lowest being in the 60s. So the disparity is 213 to 60. And he's right. If you may, obviously with a cap comes a floor. And if you make the floor say $100 million, that would mean 10 teams would have to up their pay to players. You may lose out on the top players making their $37 million a year, but it would mean more money for the middle type players. I doubt it'll ever happen, but I understand where he's coming from and talking about it. It's the first baseball person I've heard. Maybe we should ask more, and this would be down the road. Is that a route baseball should go? I don't see the players ever wanting to do that, though.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to sell because in every other league, you've got a way to suppress what the best players can make. And
right.
The thought was always you get these great players that would set the market on the top end and then everything else would follow. The problem is the last few Major League Baseball offseason have given a lot of people pause, and understandably so, because of how much free agency has been affected. So creative solutions are going to be interesting. That's something that Dominique Foxworth, who is a guy that understands so much about labor relations for us around here.
Love to ask him about this.
Would be really interesting to talk about the role that the floor plays working for. And we saw that play a huge part in what just went on with the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, the talks there, how you secure financial gains for the meat of the bell curve in this situation, the glut of your players.
Meat of the bell curve.
Meat of the bell curve.
The bell curve is meaty. So we'll see what happens going on with Major League Baseball. But coming up, we are just one day away from the PGA Tour returning. We'll talk to someone who is ready to hit it and is also ready to deal with the issues that are facing this country in a very real and personal way.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically, all on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Glad you're with us this morning. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line, including our next guest, who has to be so excited about putting the tee in the ground and getting ready to go as the PGA Tour is back beginning Thursday with the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial, one of the great old tracks on the PGA Tour in Fort Worth. Delighted to speak to Harold Varner III, PGA Tour professional. Harold, thanks for being with us this morning, up and early. You got to be so excited about getting back to playing the game you love.
Yeah, I'm just ready to get started. You know, it's just kind of like, I just can't wait for the nerves to kick in, because I know tomorrow I'll just be super nervous because I haven't played a competitive round in a while, and it's good for you. So I'm super excited, man. It's just you had the date about a month ago, but you're just like, oh man, that's so far away, and then now it's here. So just ready to get rolling.
And with the start of sports coming back up, we have seen other sports do it, and they talk about their testing protocols and programs. What are those for the PGA?
So we had to take a swab test, like a spit test, before we left. So I did that. I didn't realize how long it took to spit, to be honest with you. But, you know, the ladies right there, you're just like trying to spit. And so we did that. And then when you get here, before you even touch the ground, you have to you have to take the little needle up the nose. Oh, my gosh, it's not awesome. I sneeze about 50 times afterwards. But, you know, they're just trying to do everything they can to make it safe for everyone. And, you know, the money that we're playing for and the people that are behind it that have done all the work to make this happen. I mean, this needle for 7 seconds is I can handle that.
I think it is that willing concession that everyone's able to make. But how different has, before we get to how different the event's going to be, how different has it been leading up to it, trying to get ready for this and the amount of time that you guys have had and knowing how different the schedule is going to be?
It's easy, man. I've been playing a lot of golf. I haven't really taken much time off. We were closed down a little bit in Charlotte, a few courses. But, you know, for the most part, I played, you know, 4 to 7 times a week. And then 2 weeks prior, I went down to Florida and played every day and practiced. So it's just, I think for the most part, most people had an opportunity, no matter where you were in the country, to be prepared. But we'll find out on Thursday how prepared I really am, honestly.
Well, listen, 4 to 7 rounds a week, I'm so down with it. So just keep doing that as long as you can. Harold Varner III with us, getting ready to tee it off at the Colonial tomorrow. Harold, you're also one of the few African-Americans on tour, and in the wake of everything that went on after the killing of George Floyd, you took the time to write a very poignant and long post on Instagram. How have you been processing everything that's going on and playing in a sport that is mostly predominated by white people?
The letter took forever. It's just took 2 days, and, you know, just I was talking to most people about just how much pressure it is, you know, like out of nowhere just because you're black, and how, you know, being black doesn't mean you know all the answers, but at the same time, you know, you're walking in the shoes of, you know, other people. And obviously I'm angered like most people after seeing the video, but you don't want to respond at that moment when, like, your emotions are super high because you might not get across what you really want to get across. And I was super, you know, excited just to put it on paper, because most of the time you just call someone, you're like, oh, this is how I feel, you vent, and it's over. But, it's a challenge, but I think that we have a great opportunity to come together. I don't know, I don't see it yet, but, like, I think the time's going to come. I think there's a lot of good. We only see just the bad, and we're just going to have to make changes in, you know, whether that's in legislation, in our hearts, or wherever that may be, to just make it better for, you know, I don't think it's going to be an overnight thing, but for our kids, you know, it shouldn't be like this in 2020.
So what things would you like to see come out of this going forward, not only for the PGA Tour, but also for society in general? I mean, in Harold Varner's worldview, what could be the thing that comes out of this that does make it better, as you said, for the next generation?
Gotcha. So kids just need, the biggest thing in life, I think, is access and seeing someone else that looks like them doing it. So then they, you know, they don't ever have any questions about should I or shouldn't be, or, you know, they have an example. So I think there's a lot of black people that help run the tour. It's just not exposed. It's not seen. So I talked to Jay about that, you know, just how we could, you know, whether it's an internship, whatever that may be, let kids see the other parts of the tour, because they're important parts. I'm super quick to tell them thank you because they make us look good. You know, just the little things that make it, you know, they're hard to do, but make us look very good. In the world, I think it's a big key to, you know, just be able to have a conversation, you know, like what happened to you, you know, express your journey and why you think the way that you think, because my job's not to, you know, tell you what's right or wrong. My job's to understand where you're coming from, that we, so that we can be in this together. There's going to have to be some type of way where we can, you know, some law to where, you know, people are held a little bit more accountable. You know, obviously we've protested, we've done the things that showed our anger, and, you know, like, people are sick and tired of it. I'm sure all races are tired of just seeing things like this on TV. So the biggest thing for me now is just trying to get things on paper of solutions, you know, like what do we really want? You know, it's time to, you know, everyone has their, like, different grieving period, whether that's 6 months, 6 days, 2 days, 2 hours. But we need to get to the point where we're doing things, you know, what exactly do we want? Put that on paper, you know. So that's what I'm looking forward to, just trying to be a part of the solution.
Harold Varner are talking with us here on Golic and Wingo, a golf tournament. Golf is back tomorrow at Colonial down in Fort Worth, as they get ready to tee it up. So you're back to tournaments that count again, and one of the biggest differences for all these sports coming back, Harold, is there are no fans, so nobody in the gallery. Now, and again, none of us are pro golfers, though we'd love to be. How at all will that have an effect on what's going on inside the ropes?
I think it's going to be awesome, man. Yesterday I played with Bubba, and usually when I play with him, there's always like some heckler or someone annoying him. So yesterday we were having a lot of fun. You know, I was just like, man, you're on my level now, bud. we're doing the best that we can. I mean, like, what do you expect? Did you think that we're going to go sit in our houses for 3 months and we're going to come out and just be like, oh, it's normal? No, we're making the best of it, and that's all you can do. But yeah, I can't wait to tee it, because not many people watch me play unless I'm playing really well. So like, I know both ends of the spectrum, but it's going to be, you should ask like someone like Bubba. He's loving it. I think he gets heckled a lot, obviously, but it's pretty funny to hear him talk about it.
I'm shocked by that.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, listen, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to seeing golf being played, and we appreciate your insights on everything that's going on. So go out there, hit them straight, be safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay, man?
Well, dude, you guys have a great one.
Thanks, Harold. That is hilarious.
You think they're going to miss the guy in the backswing yelling mashed potatoes?
Oh, my gosh. I know I'm not.
It's in the hole.
Oh, my gosh.
That I'm okay with.
I think it's the job of whoever you're paired with to play that in the background on their phone.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens again. They tee it off tomorrow. Massive testing, as Harold talked about. But coming up next, it's not Panda Watch. It's Tiger Watch. Or is it Yacht Watch?
Oh, boy.
Or is it Yacht Watch Tiger Watch? Or is it Yacht Rock Radio Tiger Watch? We'll get to all of that after this.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How. Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you.
That was for you, big boy.
Two for two, Trey. Holding off on those, huh? Way to go, Jer.
It was a pregnant pause.
Well done, Jerry. So, thank you.
And I applaud Jerry for working with what we got. Now we need Jeff Passan at some point today, because Jeff does a lot of hits on ESPN. He's very in demand right now with all the news surrounding Major League Baseball. What we need Jeff to do is to go on SportsCenter or come on with us at some point and just give us a danger zone with a little oomph to it. Yeah. Like, we needed to give him to go on SportsCenter and talk about it as the dangers or the deal zone. We need to say it in the meter of the song so we can copy and paste it and have an easier one. We need that from you, Jeff, if you're listening.
Jeff's always listening. And what we could do is just say, yeah, we're in the deal zone, but if we don't get it done, then we're definitely on the highway to the danger zone. See, do it that way. Lay it both in there.
Couldn't just leave it as is, right?
No. Do you not know us at all? When have we ever left it where it is?
Is that a royal we?
Yes, it is. And you be quiet. We're trying to figure this all out because, again, it's been this back and forth between the Players Association and Major League Baseball. The latest counter proposal by the players, not 76 games, but 89 games. We all did the quick math. That's 6.5, between 13 divided by 2, 6.5, 82.5 games. Shocker. That's right about halfway for the regular season. But the real hang up, according to Jeff Passan and Jesse Rogers, our Major League Baseball reporter we had earlier, is that they don't believe, either one of them is going to believe, that the players are going to go off that 100% prorated salary, because according to them, they believe that was figured out, adjudicated, put to bed, laid to rest, however you want to do it, in March. And apparently, maybe it wasn't, because of the way that whole thing was worded, right?
It sounds like it was ambiguous, and we're going to have that sound in just a second. What goes into that? But it's been interesting because, again, as all this has gone on, it's been bleeding into the public. And Ken Kendrick from the Diamondbacks comes out yesterday and while I think people would look at this and say, all right, logically, maybe giving up some ground makes sense. Maybe the players can meet them in the middle on this. You got a reminder when Ken Kendrick started talking as to why, because all of a sudden he starts saying, well, the players should be willing to meet. All these other sports use revenue sharing, and we'd be in a lot better spot if we're a partnership. I can't understand why the players aren't going to do this. And you see, all right, when we say, well, players, you'd just be giving a little bit, they look at that and say, well, that's one part. Then we get to this new CBA negotiation. Where does it stop?
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden we know what these guys want is a revenue split. What they want is a salary cap, and they made that abundantly clear when Ken Kendrick come out like that.
And it was just horrible. There's one thing to have that discussion. There's another to have that discussion now. Just absolutely horrible timing. And we did have Jesse Rogers on, and we were trying to get back to that – that March agreement, was it that ambiguous? And Jesse Rogers, again, with us, said, yeah, it kind of was.
Under resumption of play, that was the section of resumption of play at the top. There's one line that says the sides will discuss the economic feasibility of playing without fans. Under player compensation, there's 12 sections. Not one of them mentions their pay without fans. It divides their you know, divided by 162 and prorate this and that and this. It never says this is what will happen in terms of pay without fans. They should have really laid it out with fans, without fans. So I absolutely believe it's ambiguous enough to have this argument.
So in other words, what we learn is we need more lawyers.
Well, I mean, right? Listen, and outside of Ken Kendrick, again, from the Diamondbacks owner calling, talking about a salary cap, he also said, anybody looking at that March agreement and thinking we said, yeah, you're 100% prorated is ridiculous. It's not right. And there's Jesse Rogers saying, sorry, dude, you're wrong. I mean, it was so poorly written and ambiguous, you could actually see it both ways, which is both your faults for that, right? I mean,
well, it's both your faults, but then you look at that and say, all right, ambiguity tends to side with the group that's got the power in a lot of this, right? If you're going to operate in that middle ground. That becomes the interesting part to this, because they're saying we would talk about it. Essentially, what it sounded like was written in there was a good faith agreement.
Right.
Good faith. It's one thing if you're the NBA where it's Adam Silver and it's Chris Paul and you've got all this goodwill. And so people can say, all right, we understood when that agreement was written in March, bleep was hitting the fan. Like crazy, so you can understand why something that might have value, but we know the relationship is so toxic here. So if you are MLB and the ownership and the team side of this, I don't know how you can think you could have written something that ambiguous in and expected it to go forward in good faith or anything like that. Anything other than this is standard operating procedure for us. We get our money, we get it full pro rata, right. We have not had a revenue sharing model ever in Major League Baseball for as long as we can go back here like this. Why would we start now? Why would that good faith agreement assume anything but the way that we've done business before?
And that means both sides have to be at fault at this, right? Because if they both put that in there in sort of good faith discussion, both of them were not clear enough about what they thought that meant.
I would probably lean toward the owners, that the owners didn't put it in there more specifically saying, if there are no fans in the stadium when we come back, that 100% pro rata is renegotiated. It's no longer valid. It sounds like it's on that side, right? That's kind of where I'm going.
Unless you state it pretty clearly, you assume the norm.
Right.
Like what the norm in Major League Baseball has always been.
Well, you know the old saying about assume.
Yeah.
And it goes perfectly with this negotiation more than anything I can remember in recent memory. All right, coming up next, baseball's trying to find a way back. Major League Soccer is back and doing more than just acting like they're coming back this summer. We will get to that next as we'll talk to the commissioner, Golic and Wingo, with you on ESPN Radio, and also a little darker at the moment on ESPN2.